Our reading is by David R. Hawkins, who's an MD, a psychiatrist, and a philosopher of sorts. And he wrote a book called Power Versus Force, which is a fascinating read. It's a multifaceted book, but this is one story from it that will inform us this morning when we're talking about the light of consciousness. In 1939, I was a paperboy in rural Wisconsin and had a 17-mile route. One dark winter's night, I was caught miles from home in a blizzard. The temperature was 20 degrees below zero, and my bicycle toppled over on an icy, snow-covered field. A fierce wind whipped out the newspapers that I carried in my handlebar basket, strewing them across the terrain. I broke into tears of frustration and exhaustion. My clothes were frozen stiff, and I was far from home. To get out of the wind, I broke through the icy crust of a high snowbank and dug out a place to burrow into. The shivering stopped and was replaced by a delicious warmth, and then a state of peace beyond all description. This was accompanied by a suffusion of light and a presence, capital P, of infinite love, which had no beginning and no end, and which was indistinguishable from my own essence. I became oblivious of the physical body and surroundings as my awareness fused with this all-present illuminated state. The mind grew silent. All thought stopped. An infinite presence was all that was or could be, and it was beyond time or description. After what seemed like eons, I was drawn back to an awareness of someone shaking my knee, and my father's anxious face subsequently appeared. There was a great reluctance to return to the body and all that it entailed, but I loved my father dearly, and because of his anguish, I chose to do so. In a detached way, I sympathized with his fear of my death, but at the same time, the concept of death seemed absurd. This experience was never discussed with anyone. There was no context available with which to comprehend it. I had never heard of spiritual experiences other than those reported in the lives of the saints. But after this experience, the accepted reality of the world began to seem only provisional. Traditional religious teaching lost significance, and paradoxically, I became an agnostic. Compared to the light of divinity that I had felt bathing all existence, the God of traditional religion shone dully indeed. I had lost religion, but discovered spirituality. So imagine, if you will, it's a little imaginative exercise. You can close your eyes for 10 seconds or not. A little outdoor village square in a pleasant neighborhood on a sunny late fall day. There are a variety of small shops surrounding a stone plaza. Some trees cast shade. In the center, a small fountain bubbles. There's some wooden benches near it. And on one bench sits an older, scruffy man. His clothes are tattered. He's unshaven. His expression is a bit distant. And one by one now, a series of people pass by this man. And as we overhear their thoughts with our magical powers, one at a time, here's what they think as they pass. Oh my God, is he dirty, disgusting, disgraceful. Get him out of here. Second person, wow, what a loser. He must have made some bad choices to end up like that, but he deserves it. Boy, he looks desperate. Just another sign the world is a complete mess. A fourth person passes. He seems forlorn. Probably doesn't have any friends. It's tragic. That guy looks like a menace. Maybe I should call the police before he commits some crime. I'm so frustrated that we can't solve homelessness. All he needs is a decent job. Why doesn't somebody do something? The seventh person walks by. Man, I should kick that bum sorry butt and drag it out of my neighborhood. Another person. That guy's an embarrassment, mostly to himself. Why don't some people have a little self-respect? Sheesh, poor guy. I wonder if he knows there's a homeless shelter not too far away. Next person. I haven't seen him before. Not my style, but hey, live and let live. Huh, that's interesting. When I'm done in the store, I might go see what I can do to cheer that fellow up. Maybe I'll volunteer at the local shelter. Another person. Wow, what an interesting face. He probably has a fascinating story to tell. The next person. Curious. I wonder what goes on in the heads of people like that. No doubt someone studied it. I'll have to look it up. What a kindly old man. I bet he's nice. Next person. Wow, to be calm and relaxed and not care about stuff or what others think of you. Now that's freedom. And finally, my beloved, how beautiful you are. A glimmering gem in the interconnected universe of life. So, the external event or experience is the same, right? In this case, spotting a scruffy man sitting on a bench in the village square. But the responses this stimulus evokes vary widely and wildly. What's going on here? Well, clearly what's going on is that each passerby creates their own meaning from the old man's presence. And this meaning comes from their internal interpretation. And this interpretation largely comes from our predominant level of consciousness. So it is our own consciousness that defines what we see. And I want to stress, I'm going to explain that more, but I want to stress how important this is. Because our ego, the little I that walks around and thinks it's all of us, thinks that our interpretations represent reality with a capital R. Of course the old man is this. Or of course he's that. Is it obvious? Sheesh. But in truth, we don't know what he is. He may have a serious mental illness. Or a despairing heart. Or might be potentially violent. Or he may be a spiritual avatar, brimming with unconditional love and the wisdom of the ages. We don't know, but our autopilot minds, filtered through a particular level of consciousness, tells us that we do know. And we do this all the time. And so because this is a universal unconscious process of the human psyche, it's important to become conscious of it. Because when we become aware that a particular level of consciousness is operating on autopilot and coloring all our perceptions, we have the opportunity to grow beyond it. And this changes the world. This changes the world. I'll come back to that thought, but now I want to go through the reactions of our passersby again, and this time examine the level of consciousness that each person holds. This hierarchy of levels comes from physician and researcher David R. Hawkins in a book that I mentioned called Power Versus Force. And this is the same Dr. Hawkins who in our earlier reading described how his consciousness was forever altered by his experience in a Wisconsin blizzard, where he encountered an all-loving presence that in traditional language some might call God. From there he went on to become a psychiatrist, but one who maintained a deep connection with this presence and used it in his healing practice. So one other quick preface is which Dr. Hawkins explains, is that these levels of consciousness are not found in pure form in any individual, or rarely so. We probably operate in different levels in different parts of our lives, but what we're talking about here is kind of the sum total or the dominant level that we tend to be in. So are we ready to check these out again and move through it a little more fully? Okay, so we're passing the old guy on the bench. Number one was, oh my God, is he dirty, disgusting, disgraceful. Get him out of here. This reaction comes from the lowest level of consciousness, according to Dr. Hawkins, that of shame. Shame creates unbearably low self-esteem, even to the point of feeling like a non-person. And it's so powerful that it often either manifests as violence to oneself, the extreme of which is suicide, or as intolerant cruelty to others, all done in a futile attempt to expunge the pain of it from oneself. Number two, wow, what a loser. He must have made some bad choices to end up like that, but hey, he deserves it. Just up from shame is guilt. Now, there's healthy guilt, which is an appropriate remorse for a mistake. But here Hawkins means a consuming guilt that feels unforgivable and is obsessed with punishment of the self or of another. Among other manifestations, this is the domain of religious demagogues who are usually at this level themselves and use guilt to coerce and control others. Fire and brimstone. But guilt provokes rage, and as we see in the most extreme moralistic, religious, or political expressions, killing is frequently the result. The third level. Boy, he looks desperate. Just another sign the world is a complete mess. After guilt on the scale is apathy or hopelessness or despair. This is the state of deep helplessness, where even if resources are available, the energy to use them might be absent. People stuck in apathy are dependent and often feel like a burden to others, because to them life seems primarily to be a burden. Our fourth person passes and thinks, he seems forlorn. Probably doesn't have any friends. That's tragic. This is an expression of the level of grief. It's just a step up from apathy, but it isn't despairing, but it's usually depressing. Like guilt, there's normal grief that we sometimes need to pass through, but this is all-encompassing, where life's losses feel constant and overwhelming. And remember now, these perceptions are being projected onto this man on the bench. The fifth one is this. That guy looks like a menace. Maybe I should call the police before he commits a crime. This is the level of fear speaking. And as Hawkins says, it seems to run much of the world. In particular, because so-called leaders often use it to manipulate the populace. Of course, there are real threats in the world. But fear as a dominant level of consciousness becomes obsessed with a world that is full of hazards and needs to be constantly guarded against. At its worst, it expands into full-blown paranoia. Number six, I'm so frustrated that we can't solve homelessness. All he needs is a decent job. Why doesn't somebody do something? This is an expression of what Hawkins terms desire. Desire is better than the levels below it, because it can provide the energy to achieve goals, but it's shallow and brittle. And with it come the shadows of addictions, including the lust for power or prestige, greed, external approval, etc. The seventh person walks by. Man, I should kick that bum's sorry butt and drag it out of my neighborhood. This is anger speaking. It's got more energy than the previous levels, but as we know, it can be used to build or destroy. Anger over social injustices can spark positive change, but more often anger is about resentment and revenge and is therefore volatile and dangerous. Number eight, that guy's an embarrassment, mostly to himself. Why don't some people have a little self-respect? This is the voice of pride. Pride has a positive aspect, and it's the first level that usually feels good to a person, but only in relation to the levels below it. Because pride remains vulnerable to external conditions, which can deteriorate. It can also be arrogant and exclusive and so divisive. The next one, person comes along. Sheesh, poor guy. I wonder if he knows there's a homeless shelter not too far away. This is courage talking. And in Hawkins' model, courage is the critical watershed by which a person moves from being a victim to being empowered. As he puts it, at the lower levels, the world seems as hopeless, is seen as hopeless, sad, frightening, or frustrating. But at the level of courage, life is seen to be exciting, challenging, and stimulating. Courage implies the willingness to try new things and deal with the changes and challenges of life. And as the expression of sympathy for the man on the bench implies, it's also the level at which one first starts to take other people into account. Number 10. I haven't seen him before. Not my style, but hey, live and let live. This David Hawkins calls neutrality. He calls it that because life below it is seen as opposing black and white dichotomies that create polarization. Safe and unsafe, good and evil, guilt and innocence, etc. But at neutrality, complexity begins to be allowed. And there's a basic sense of well-being and trust in life, and less need to be judgmental of oneself or others. So we're getting toward the higher levels here. And the 11th one is this. That's interesting. When I'm done in the store, I might go see what I can do to cheer that fellow up. And maybe I'll volunteer at the local shelter. This is the level of willingness and what Hawkins calls the gateway to the higher levels. It's where one overcomes inner resistances to life and is committed to full participation. Willingness is sympathetic and responsive to others' needs, and the willing are full contributors to society. Level 12, wow, what an interesting face. He probably has a fascinating story to tell. This is acceptance talking, which is not passivity, but full engagement without the need to control. Even more than willingness, this is the level that lives harmoniously with the forces of life, whatever comes. Here, external circumstances don't make one happy or unhappy, and love can't be given or taken away by another. At acceptance, love and satisfaction are created from within. 13, curious. I wonder what goes on in the heads of people like that. No doubt someone studied it. I'll have to look it up. This is an expression of reason or rationality. This is the level of science and medicine and law and other great professional fields, and it's obviously hugely valuable. But Hawkins claims, and I believe he's right, that by itself, it can't function as a guide to the highest levels because it's bound by its own methods of knowing. What Hawkins experienced in the snowbank was not a reasonable thing, but it was real. So reason is valuable, but it has its limits. The next level, what a kindly old man. I'll bet he's nice. Above reason is love. Not love from the movies, which is all about passion and feeling and is so easily frustrated. Here, love means agape. A love for one's fellow humans and other sentient beings that is unconditional and unwavering. Love doesn't emanate from the rational mind, but from the heart. And love overcomes conflict not by attacking it, which fear might do, or by analyzing it, which reason might do, but by transcending it. The next level, wow, to be calm and relaxed and not care about stuff or what others think of you. Now that's freedom. Hawkins calls this next level joy, and it is the rare domain of advanced spiritual adepts. Here the world is illuminated by exquisite beauty. This kind of joy expresses itself mainly through compassion. And when felt by another, it has a great healing effect in and of itself. Finally, the last passerby thinks, "My beloved, how beautiful you are, a glimmering gem in the interconnected universe of all life." This is the level that is hard to put into words, the level of enlightenment or God consciousness. This is the level of the greatest spiritual figures of history, who seem to have had a direct connection to the higher realms and whose loving energy spans the ages and continues to inspire and uplift humanity. Okay. Hearing this now, it's pretty obvious that each level of consciousness defines our so-called reality, yes? And it also affects the man's reality, because the level we bring to an encounter with that person on the bench is likely to strongly influence how he responds, no? If you come at somebody, you've felt it yourself the other way. If someone comes at you with anger or with shame or with fear or whatever, you're going to respond in a certain way. If somebody comes at you with acceptance and love and willingness and joy, it's a very different experience for both parties. So this is how these levels of consciousness and what we bring to this changes the world. It really does. And in January, I'm actually going to talk more about this specifically, both in individual and societal terms, because there's too much to cover today, but I think it's really important, and this is going to be a great springboard for a whole nother level of how this operates in the world. But as we enter this Christmas season, I want to close here with a thought on what we're actually celebrating. And to do that, I want to return to the last sentence of our reading, where Hawkins says, "Compared to the light of divinity that I had felt bathing all existence, the God of traditional religion shone dully indeed. I had lost religion, but discovered spirituality." So this season, to me, is not about celebrating historical events, or more accurately, historical myths, much less the religious dogmas that have sprung from them. It is instead about celebrating the great spiritual light of the enlightened. The enlightened loving consciousness that some people have attained. So as the wreaths we talked about in the children's time are hung on doors and windows to invite the spirit of Christmas to enter the home, we can invite the light of higher consciousness into our inner homes, our spirits, through traditions, rituals, prayers, song, fellowship. Because that level has great power and it's worth pursuing. As Hawkins writes, just one instant in a very high state can completely change a person's orientation to life. And that's what we've been talking about, basic orientation to life. He goes on, "It can be said that the individual who was is no more, and a new person is born out of the experience." So this is what is born at Christmas time, or any time. And if it's really tapped into and emanates out to others, there really is a chance for peace on earth, goodwill toward all, to become the way of the world. Blessed be and amen.